Welcome to another podcast, Paul Droid. My name is Russell, and I'm with Daniel.
Good evening.
And Gareth.
Hello.
This is episode 68, so I'm going to put you both on the spot here. Episodes were caps. We now draw level with the tally that was for over 20 years, our record caps total.
Was it?
Yeah. It's one of the all-time greats.
Trevor Ford.
No.
All Church.
Ivor All Church. 68 caps.
John Charles or Mel Charles? Maybe I was beaten to it by the right answer.
This is the Ivor All Church podcast.
Dedicated to him, yeah. And quite a lengthy Wales career. Retired in 66.
Well, there was no Euros in his day, and qualifying for the World Cup was in about four games, wasn't it? So,
well, Euros would have snuck in towards the very end, but yeah.
They didn't play many games in a year in those days, no. Did they? Not at international.
British Home Championships, I suppose, wouldn't you? So you might get a few more of those kind of games. But even so. 68 odd caps in those days.
And for a period of time, sort of late 50s, possibly into the 60s, the home championship doubled up as qualifiers.
Yeah. Only 58, they'd already broken that down.
A 16 season international career, 1950 to 1966. 68 caps, 23 goals. And currently lies 14th. So there you go. We're going to talk China Cup. Nice symmetry, because we were the three together that were looking ahead to it. I'm just going to put it out there. I sort of flippantly, albeit, even flippantly counts. I think you said like 2-1 or 2-0 against China.
I think I said 1-0. I thought, struggled to score goals, back to our usual problems. Thought we might have a lot of possession and territory, but failed to make it count. I was completely wrong. And delighted to be wrong. We were 2-0 up after about 12 minutes, I think.
Yeah, and for a brief period of time, given that I sort of flippantly said maybe 5-1, I was willing them on at 5-0.
That's it. 6-0 up after 63 minutes. Now, you've got to be happy against anyone with that, haven't you? Eaten them regardless. So,
I mean, it's great. I think what that illustrates is how little, in the last podcast we knew of Chinese football, they were even worse than I imagined they were going to be. You know, I think in Euro qualifying, we come up against a minnow in every group. We've had Andorra, we've had Moldova recently. Those teams give us a game. Those teams make it hard for us. China did not make it hard for us one little bit.
No.
They were appalling. And what surprised me, I mean, like you said, we didn't know much about them. That's fair enough. But we know a lot about Marcelo Lippi. And so on that basis, you would expect them to, at the very least, be organised, drilled, tight, banks of four, probably fairly dour. I mean, they didn't even get a chance to show whether they were exciting or dour, or they were kind of reckless and gung-ho, but they held a high line and we just ripped them to shreds.
Yeah, they played exactly the same way that Russia played against us in the Euros and that Israel played us in Israel. The two times you could look back on in the last 3 years and say, here's how you don't play against Wales.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Yeah, you'd think that Lippi would have enough about him. So if anything, just try and thwart the opposition. Mm-hmm. But they were much poorer than I'd anticipated. I hope we can play them again. At home, we'll have the Wales Cup next year. Well, return the favour.
Australia managed to wangle playing them in qualifiers. Well, maybe we just need to fall out with everybody else. And like an Israel playing a different continent.
Yeah, well, it does make you wonder, stumbling on a more serious point, that with the World Cup coming up, I can't help thinking, I'm sure we've mentioned this before, but the European teams are probably, I'm not sure how many European teams there'll be at the World Cup, probably 15 or 16. There's a case there should be more by comparison to how weak North America and Asia are, in particular, maybe not Africa these days, because apparently China beat South Korea in qualifying. China have been to a World Cup in recent years.
Yeah.
I think you just see just how easy, no wonder Australia wanted to get in and through that door, because it's almost a guaranteed qualification route every time.
They're not. In terms of the FIFA rankings, okay, you take a pinch of salt, to a degree. I mean, of the four teams, they were the lowest ranked in the tournament, but they're not in the hundreds.
No.
I think it was about sort of 64, 65, something like that. So on that basis, I'm thinking traditionally the powerhouses in Asia, notwithstanding Australia kind of, technically being Asian, but you tend to think Japan, South Korea, Iran, That's sort
Saudi
of,
Arabia Saudi tend Arabia, to qualify
yeah,
quite
yeah, Saudi Arabia, yeah, okay.
But they're still never any good when they get to the World Cup, are they?
Yeah.
Other
yeah.
than Saeed Awairan's brilliant goal in 1994, which is a long time ago now. Because yeah. they've had some tonkins in recent tournaments, yeah. haven't they?
Well, Junior Blake passed, didn't they, in one of the
games. Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
But to my mind, China then, I felt, given that they have qualified, as you say, Dan, recently, to my mind, they were sort of like that next bracket down. But again, that's still not kind of the beatings that countries in Asia like Maldives get and that sort of thing. I was thinking they're the China sort of country that dish those sort of beatings out.
Well, you look at how low down Georgia were in the rankings for the last qualifying campaign. And, I mean, they were down in the hundreds, weren't they? Barely won a game in 2 years, 3 years. Mm-hmm. Now, Georgia were a far superior team. I mean, it's incomparable. I mean, we had tough games against Georgia. That was a walk in the park against China. It just made me think, I mean, that's how weak football is in that part of the world. Let's be honest. You know, it really isn't very good.
Unless, of course, you look at it, and I'm not sure I can kind of back this up. You go, well, we just blew them away with positivity, with much more attacking intent than I've seen off us for a while. We were fluid. Players were kind of interchanging position. We were attacking them through the middle. We were attacking them down the flanks. You say two early goals. We talked in previous games in the qualifiers, albeit there's more riding on those games. We haven't cleared off the line in Moldova. You know, if that goes in, it changes it. Even went back to Cyprus in the previous campaign. Dave Edwards had that goal disallowed. If those go in, then the dynamic of the game changes. And so on that basis, it's all ifs and buts. But maybe it went for us. They're thinking, okay, we're at home. This is kind of our tournament. We've got to keep, you know, giving it a go. And we just pick them off with ease.
I agree with Gareth. Their approach to the game, they got it completely wrong. Hmm. But even a half-decent team at 3-0 down would think, right, We'll do whatever it takes to stop them playing. But they didn't. And in the end, it was only us making lots of substitutions in the last sort of 25 minutes that meant that we didn't add more. The other results, our previous biggest win was against San Marino, 1996, 6-0. And I think prior to that, it was the Faroe Islands, 6-0 in 1993. So that's the company that you're keeping there. You know, San Marino, the Faroe Islands and China. So, I think the Faroe Islands would beat this China team.
But we've had Andorra, we've had Liechtenstein, we've had San Marino more recently, and the best we can do is, I think, 3-0 against Liechtenstein. So 2 and 3-0 for the past 20 years has been our, well, 4-0 against Moldova, admittedly, has been our limit against minnows.
Yeah.
So to actually give them a bit of a...
I'm delighted, it's quite refreshing. Yeah, absolutely.
And actually, it doesn't take us 10 minutes to be 2-0 up, it takes us 82 minutes to grab a second and put the game to bed, finally, sort of thing.
And it may well be that under a different manager or in different circumstances, we'd have started the game a bit more conservatively, and you know, maybe only have been 3-0 or 4-0. You know.
Well, I'm glad that if you think you've got the personnel to go for it, then we went for it, because I wouldn't like to think of missed opportunities, because there were a few times in the qualifying campaign just gone that maybe we shouldn't have been so cautious, because it didn't help us in the end. The Czech Republic put 4 on them. You know, China have conceded 10 goals in 2 games. They're clearly not a very good team.
I mean, the results suggest they've gone backwards quite dramatically in the last year. Last year's China Cup, they lost 2-0 to Iceland and drew 1-1 with Croatia. You know, they must have had something about them last summer.
That does surprise me.
Well, a year ago and a bit more, so it was January 2017. But they've clearly gone backwards.
Not even England could beat Iceland the last time they played.
Not quite.
They were very hospitable. I mean, they were very hospitable when we landed in the airport. And that hospitality seemed to extend several more days.
Exactly.
Which was lovely of them.
Their starting 11 are also members of the all-China Chris Gunter fan club that they've got over there, which is nice.
And I said this on Twitter, I think we all really need to up our game in terms of hero worship. And it's a shame that we didn't win, because as Dave Owens from Wales Online sort of suggested on the morning of the game, if we win this, we're having another bus parade, surely. I mean, maybe not the city centre, but just around Lanchet Major or Roos would have been worthwhile. But it was, you know, again, it was easy. It's a fairly kind of plastic kind of tournament. It's probably more for Chinese state global ambitions. It's about that, I guess, more than anything to do with on the pitch. But Uruguay are a decent side. Czech Republic are no mugs. And so, on that basis, I think it was good that we went out and we treated it with, I think, the respect that the invitation deserved.
Yeah.
Because, you know, let's be honest, it's not often we get invitations to these sorts of tournaments. And I thought we got quite a lot out of it. I thought it was a really productive effort. A little bit of cynicism came through on Twitter. I assume that there was a little bit of whinging and difficulty on the part of clubs about releasing players at this time of year to go all that way. And Mark Evans from the FAW sort of corrected me, and happily stand corrected, that all the clubs were very accommodating.
Yeah.
And so on that basis, I think it's good that it was only really Lawrence and Ramsey that weren't out there. That you
I think
all kind of first choice, first 11 or certainly kind of match day squad sort of picks. So I thought on the basis of new caps being dished out, more experience for some of these players, it's always great, whatever the sport, to blood young players in a successful winning team.
Yeah,
and it is when you're throwing them in desperate, hoping that someone's going to come up with a bit of magic.
And despite China's limitations, we went and did our own thing. We did it professionally. You know, we picked a strong team to play that game, and okay, they were limited, but we were clinical, and we took our chances, and we didn't start chucking on, you know, random youngsters for the sake of it until that game, till long after that game was won. It's interesting that he then picked the same team for the Uruguay game, and Bale and Joe Allen, I think, were both on the pitch at 90 minutes at the end of that game. You know, so it kind of highlights, I guess, that the clubs weren't too difficult about it, that we felt we could go there, and when it came to a sort of a final, Bale got 90 minutes, that Joe Allen was able to keep playing. We didn't feel under any pressure to take off players to suit the clubs. It was therefore a worthwhile exercise. You know, we got to see our strongest team having a bit of a game, or close to our strongest team have a bit of a game together, whilst bringing on a few new caps and giving some youngsters 20 minutes here and there as well.
But actually, some of those picks, to me, albeit it's against China, but it just sows a bit of a seed of doubt in the what has been, let's be honest, kind of automatic selection of players like Neil Taylor, because I thought Declan John did well in both games.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he was ever fullback in either of them. He pushed on a lot, he got forward, he put in some good delivery, more of a wing back, or even just lining up in front of Ben Davis.
Yeah.
And I don't imagine for one second that Wilson will keep Ramsey out of the team, but it's probably one of our recurring topics on these podcasts is, you know, when's Harry Wilson going to sort his career out?
Yeah.
He's got a decent loan move, he's doing well in the Championship, a couple of injuries notwithstanding, which we talked about last time. But I thought, again, you know, he played really, really well.
I mean, I think of all the players, he's the one who comes out of those two games the best.
Yeah.
I think if he has a strong finish to the season at Hull, he's got a great chance of playing in those Nations League games in the autumn. I mean, okay, Ramsey will come back in, but he could play one of the forward positions. I think we've talked a lot about, do we really need friendlies? And I've never really been that desperate to see us play a load of friendlies. But what playing two matches and taking them quite seriously showed was that Declan John and Harry Wilson now give people like Lawrence and Taylor and Hal Robson-Kano and people like that something to think about. You know, if a friendly has a bit of substance about it and a little bit of competitiveness about it, then it gives players a chance to play themselves into the first team for competitive games, which is what ultimately makes them worthwhile. And yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see Neil Taylor and Hal Robson-Kano or Lawrence or someone like that who's played recently missing out because other players have come on.
Yeah. Gareth Bale scored a hat-trick. Because given that he kind of charged at Rush's record.
Yes.
From about, I don't know, goal number, 15 or 16. Yeah. I haven't gone back and done the actual kind of maths. But was struggling to kind of hunt it down properly in the end. In the last year, couldn't have wished for better opposition, I don't suppose.
Yeah, absolutely.
First hat-trick since Robert Earnshaw in Scotland in 2004. Rush then was 12 years before. 13 years, so it's 14 years, it's 12 years, 13 years. So we've probably kind of average got to wait now till about what would the maths be, 2032, 2030 to 32 until the next one.
Yes.
The first away from home, because all of the others were at home, since Cliff Jones got three against Northern Ireland in 1963. Good
fact. That is a good fact.
Northern Ireland or Ireland. Been on the receiving end of most of our hat-tricks by quite some margin, actually.
Is it?
Yeah. He took him well as well. It wasn't any kind of like finding his radar, a couple of scuffed shots. He, you know, he can do that. Sometimes just takes a while to find his range.
Are you having a dig at Rush's hat-trick against the Faroe Islands in 1993? So it's like shin, ankle, and buns, and it's sort of they all sort of just creep over the line in the most shambolic way possible.
And I think Rob Earnshaw's one of his is off his shoulder and possibly someone else on the way in.
But see, getting against China, it's not the most glorious of games to break the record in, but he does it with a hat trick. Playing China allows him to do it with a hat trick, and it allows him to score maybe goals other than the type of goal he's been scoring for us most recently, free kicks or headers or whatever. Such was the weakness of their defence. The movement and interplay between Vokes and Wilson and Bale himself meant they were nice clinical goals.
Well, even Andy King had a free rein, didn't he? Charging up the centre of the park. It was like Lothar Matthäus from Italia 90. Yeah. Pinging him in from 30 yards. He almost scored a few.
Yeah, he had a pretty good sort of direct running from deep against Uruguay. He had a couple of pot shots.
Not just the China game, absolutely. Yeah.
I think he did okay across the two games.
That was one of the things from the two games, because obviously I didn't see the game live at the time. Well, either of them, obviously, because I was in work. But having watched the games back, if you looked at the thread on the BBC website for the Uruguay game, you would have thought we were on the verge of a hiding. The game is much more even than it was sort of portrayed as being on a lot of the online threads. Simply because Suarez does butcher a couple of goals, you know, golden opportunities that you don't expect him to do. But either way, that's his problem. But the game itself was much more even than I was anticipating, because obviously you sit down to watch the game in the evening, you already know the results. And I was expecting a bit of a turkey shoot. We had more shots than they did across the whole of the game. Yeah. We did have more clear-cut chances.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? You know, if you look at the stats, we had more shots on goal, more corners, possessions about even. I think there was just that difference in class and the movement sort of up front, that when they created three or four really good chances, they were really good chances where Chester or Williams a few times, but Chester as well, got exposed a little bit. You know, they hit the post. Another day they scored three or four, but you know, a couple of our chances were decent. Vokes had a really good chance early on. There's another one from a Wilson free kick that Bale knocks on. I mean, that was one of the kind of real bonuses of the two games, to have Harry Wilson who can take a set piece. You know, we've had Leddy do it, we've had Ramsey, but I'm not convinced that Ramsey's set piece delivery is always the best. And even if he's in the team, to have his right foot and Wilson's left foot and still therefore allow Bale to be in the box. That's definitely a different weapon, and it was when we looked at our most dangerous, actually, some of the balls he was able to put in from dead.
And actually, that occurred to me as an aside, watching some highlights the other night. Tom Lawrence scored for Derby against Preston with a free kick, and again you're thinking there's another option potentially. But Wilson's delivery was excellent, as was Declan Jones, I thought, in both games. They were much more incisive, weren't they, their attacks. But then I guess after a while, we were pushing on a bit. But I just thought we had a great... We just showed much more attacking intent.
Yeah.
And I think that's not about formation. I think that's largely about application to the game, or the games in this case, and going, OK, there's not qualification points riding on it. There's no point going all that way and then just setting up, you know, Northern Ireland style, two banks of five and just... That, the others break you down. You may as well kind of give it a go.
That was the angle I was going for, because by the time I watched the game, I thought I knew what had already happened. So I thought maybe we limit them to a 1-0 and we essentially park the bus and frustrate them. But that's not actually how the game panned out at all. We did attempt, they are better than us, but we did attempt to play against them and to match them and not do a sort of park the bus. It wasn't like
the France friendly, was it, going back a few months? Mm. I mean, they tore us to pieces, France, in that game. And this is a Uruguay team. That manager's been manager for like forever, hasn't he?
Yeah.
How many times have Cavani and Suarez played together? Tons, I expect. And Rodriguez was great as well. They're used to it. They've played together like that for ages. You know, we were introducing Wilson into that. We were trying to kind of maybe look at new ways of how our front three or our attacking players could be a bit more fluid together. And that'll take time to sort of bed in. They didn't have that. They were just used to play together.
Yeah. South American countries just play more internationals.
Yeah.
I mean, the qualifying campaign goes on forever and they play each other. All of them twice, and then they have the their continental European Championship equivalent, and then they're obviously kind of cachet opponents in terms of friendlies as well, and they'll travel anywhere to play a game more or less. But no, you're right. I think it was Cavani's 100th cap against us, and Suarez has definitely got over 100 caps. Yeah.
And if we could have played the way we were playing 2 years ago, and we probably would have kept them quieter, but we wouldn't have created any chances either. So
absolutely.
But again, it did strike me, because it was a good old ding dong game.
Yeah,
and
no, it was.
It was end to end, and it did strike me that phrase that John Toshak used to use, you know, either your head was cold or your feet were cold, you know, when you're pulling the duvet up or down. But on first glance at what Giggs has done with what he's got, I suppose, because I've argued this elsewhere, I don't think any Welsh manager has ever taken over with as abundant amount of resources playing wise as he is doing. I don't think that is arguable. Given that, he seemed to have unlocked a little bit more fluidity, certainly more intent. And look, it's not just him either, of course. It's also the other kind of coaching staff around him, notwithstanding Austin Roberts is still there, trying to impart some of these ideas as well. And I thought that was really promising from him. Given that, cards on the table, a little bit lukewarm about the appointment, as many have. Give him a chance. And I was quite impressed with what I saw of him. Given as well, he said he was more nervous about this than at any point in his playing career. He made a lot of the right noises in terms of the amount of pride he was referring to in terms of being there and finally having his first game and things like that. I thought he came across a lot better in the press conferences. I guess it stands to reason he's going to grow into the role.
I think that's absolutely it. I think, and it's a good opportunity to do that, wasn't it? Kind of a good week together with everybody. Two games, you know, close next to each other. There'll be the Mexico game now in the summer. You know, he's got quite a nice stretch of time to get used to the role and what it involves, and you know, hopefully by the autumn, you know, he will seem more natural in the role.
Tony Strudwick and Albert Stavenberg. The two assistants. Oh, Tony Roberts as well, of course, is still there because he's been goalkeeping coach for a while. But I think it remains to be seen. I suppose the point I'm trying to make is that him still trying to find a balance between attack and the defence. It was hard to say against China because they offered so little, but we were carved apart a lot by Uruguay. But then Cavani and Suarez carve a lot of countries apart, I guess.
Well, it's very hard to judge, isn't it? Because a lot of our games in European qualifying for whatever over the next couple of years will be playing teams less good than Uruguay but much better than China. So
absolutely,
you know, we'll need to kind of find the balance for the, you know, for each opponent. I still think the future for us is Ben Davis playing a more attacking role down the left. I think that if we are going to shift the balance more towards an attacking game, you know, we've got to get away from the limitations of Gunter and Taylor as our wide sort of outlets. You know, maybe he'll go to more of a four across the midfield and someone like Declan John playing there. I don't know if he sees that as a permanent solution, but for us to be able to get at teams in a way we didn't probably have as much chance to do against Uruguay, I think that kind of overlap, that sort of what Ben Davis does well for Spurs. You know, he's one of the best players in the Premier League at doing something that we don't really ask him very much to do in a Wales shirt. And for all Gunter's service to Wales and for his qualities, he's limited in that respect on the right-hand side as well. And that's something that's going to have to be looked at again, I think.
One thing that I thought was a little bit odd was Ben Woodburn came on in the first game, but he didn't come on in the second game, given that we were also chasing it. But we sent the likes on of Bowden. I mean, all of the outfield players that went got game time, and you can kind of sense from the management's point of view that was clearly something they wanted to do. So irrespective of the result, you know, Bowden was going to have to come on in the second game because he didn't come on the first. Bradshaw came on in the first. I think Lockyer came on in both. Then he met them, got a game. Conor Roberts then gets his cap. So, but actually with Woodburn, you can both, given that he's rescued two games for us in qualifying, he can actually chase a game and potentially win it for you or rescue it for you in the case of Uruguay, but also probably arguably needs game time anyway, both in terms of international and just minutes on the pitch this season anyway. I was kind of surprised that when he sends Lee Evans on to replace Wilson, nothing against Evans because I quite like Lee Evans, you're kind of thinking, well, surely Woodburn's the more natural selection there.
I wonder if in those last 25 minutes it started to look a little bit less like the China Cup tournament, a little bit more like a friendly where you empty the bench a little bit. It seemed to peter out as a game before that change, Wilson for Evans. I think probably from about 65 minutes, not an awful lot was happening. And maybe you know, on the day he just took the decision, let's make sure Evans and everybody else has had a bit of time on the pitch. It wasn't that important for us during that game, was it?
If needing to find a reason, that probably seems as good a reason as we could have, because I would agree, if you were desperately chasing a game, he would offer something to kind of unlock the opposition.
Yeah.
Given that, as you said, he's done that in two big games for us. but I don't think the manager was thinking in those sort of terms. Yeah. Stick or twist. I think it was more, from his point of view, more an exercise in making sure that everybody got to show a bit of something so that every person is slightly more experienced now when the next proper qualifying campaign starts than they currently are. Because he thought, well, okay, I know what this guy can do, but I still need to see what a couple of other guys can do. So in that sense, it is a friendly, and you were doing what you'd expect to do with a friendly. If it was a competitive game, I think that's exactly what we would have seen. Once again, you know, we've got a few more options than we're used to having, to be perfectly honest.
I mean, it's interesting what it says about where Ben Woodburn is. So recently that he was a hero for us in qualifying, but we talked a little bit, either in the last podcast or the podcast before, about whether Harry Wilson's loan spell and his performances at Hull has put him higher at the pecking order. And so it would seem, the fact that he started both the games, that he had a big chance to show what he could do, and Woodburn much, much less so, and then wasn't used again in a game that he might have affected, shows how one consequence of that kind of growth in options and competition for places is that you can be on a great high at one point, but it doesn't take too much for someone to supersede you in that pecking order. And maybe that's something for Woodburn to think about in the autumn.
Yeah,
it'd be interesting to see how he fits into what Liverpool are doing next season.
Speaking of highs and lows, it was disappointing that Ethan Ampadu pulled out, and it was, I mean, it's only April, but it's a season-ending injury as well. It's a fractured ankle. Playing for Chelsea, and it was in the UEFA Youth League, which apparently is a thing, in a win over Real Madrid. That's a shame, because that would have been, for all of Mepham and Lockyer and Conor Roberts coming on defensively, he's clearly next cab off the rank.
Yeah.
And I think the general consensus is surely that he'll be replacing Ashley Williams.
Mm.
I think, frankly, sooner rather than later.
Oh, yes.
And it was a shame that he wasn't out there. That was, for me, the other disappointment.
Yeah, I think so much of where we might be going in the sort of gigs era hinges on what we do with him. So it was a shame not to be able to see how we might kind of evolve as a team with him coming into it, given, you know, his youth and his relative inexperience. And we've talked before about not wanting to rush players in just because they've played a bit of under 23 football. But he's demonstrated in caps for us and in sort of a small number of appearances for Chelsea that he's there or thereabouts in a position where, to be honest, we can't really wait for him to be a first choice player in the Premier League or whatever it might be. If he'd gone into the back three, would we have done something different with Ben Davis, or is he going to go into the midfield and play alongside Joe Allen? You know, it would give us a lot more of a clue and an idea about where we're going as a team when we see how he fits into things, because I think he's going to be very soon a really important part of that. I think he's going to have a big role in the next campaign. You know, he's not one we're going to be waiting around for another couple of years for, I don't think.
I agree. I think he's a big part of the future, whoever the manager was, clearly. And I think it would just be great, given the way that Giggs, I think on reflection, used the squad. You can perhaps have seen, had he been fit and out there, he'd have played, he'd have probably figured in both games.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'd have started one, but I have no doubt we'd have probably seen him in holding midfield defence, and as he did again, albeit against Panama, who were quite limited opposition as well, just popping up everywhere and just reading the game immaculately as well. And so I think it would have been great to have seen him on that stage, but these things happen. I guess the thing then is for him to get fit, get a full pre-season under his belt, maybe a couple of games, and then blood and thunder of Ireland at home, where he can be the calming influence, maybe. That's early September.
It's September.
So it's Mexico at the end of May. I think the August date, I think, is long gone from the international calendar. So I don't think we're going to get
good riddance.
Because we were always dreadful in here. I think there is another window in May time, but I would imagine that's probably going to have been announced. But who knows? And then it's straight into the Nations League, which has got that competitive edge to it. And I think the more I've got my head around how it works, and since the draw, I think I quite like that tournament as well.
I'm not sure I have even yet got my head completely around it.
I haven't even attempted to get my head around it.
It's one of those things where I'll have to just kind of watch it happen and learn in a very practical way, I think.
If only there was a blog and a podcast dedicated to the Welsh national team that carried something that figured that out.
I don't want to do down our own content. I have read it. I think it reflects more poorly on me than the articles that I still don't quite grasp every aspect.
I was reading up on it and I found myself having to do a lot of scrolling down, and I remember thinking, I didn't think it was going to be this complicated, so I kind of backed out. We'll just do it on the day to see what happens. So,
before then, the women are in England, I think it's at Southampton,
yes,
for a qualifier. They're top of their group, and you know, England are good, obviously. Phil Neville, Nothing's been unearthed yet about what you said about us on Twitter, so I'm assuming there isn't anything. Surely that spade work has been done. Best luck to them. There's coaches going from Wales as well. Those have been arranged. And I think that's kind of, again, it's just this rising tide lifting all boats. A metaphor is that there's just renewed interest in all of the teams. Yes. It's not just first team men's team. It's at the youth level. It's men, it's the women, which is great. And that's all to do with not just the Euros. It's to do with better organisation and just a kind of like a real kind of clued up, but clued in to the fans and to the media and what people want, you know, on the part of the FAW. I think they're going to find that tough because England at home,
they're very strong.
Women's,
women's game, very strong team.
Dan, you and I went down to the Sea International. At,
did indeed.
The Stadio Generino in Bari. Not Bari, just to clarify with your mum. In joke, going back a while.
David Platt wasn't there.
No. And again, we gave them a good game, but they just picked us apart. A few mistakes at the back. I think I'm right in saying that all the English players were practically full-time. But our first goal is different gravy.
Oh, our first goal is a peach.
You get to see it. It's an absolute peach. And we, again, even at that kind of level, it was, you know, not to the same extent, clearly, but it was looking to get the ball down. It was passing, it was moving.
But both teams, to be fair, because it was the tail end of that bad weather. There's a 3G pitch now, I think, at Jenner Park. Yeah. So the surface held up, the surface was good. And both teams attempted to play football, keep the ball on the ground and actually play, which surprised me because I thought it might turn into a bit of a hoof-a-thon. But it was a decent game. And there wasn't much in terms of... I think people were kind of expecting there might be like a big gulfing class between what was basically the England team. Most of their players are professionals playing in the conference. Ours were taken from the Welsh Premier League. There wasn't much between the teams. They were more clinical than we were, to be fair. But it was an entertaining game. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
It was.
Even though it was freezing.
It was cold. It was cold. Or you were just underdressed.
No, it was cold.
Bumped into Nick Stradlin down there, friend of the podcast, the guy behind Movies Wales, who did that documentary about Wild Gorka, Red Wall in Bordeaux. Mark Cooper, bumped into who else? Bumped into Colin, bumped into Tim. So there was kind of like a little kind of people getting their fix, even if they weren't in China or because there's not a home game for quite some time. Alex, we saw down there. I did talk, I think it was with Colin actually beforehand, as to I still think that they've picked these games in China and LA to keep him as far away from a home crowd gigs as possible, but he's going to get a warm welcome after a 6-0 drubbing in his first game.
I thought so. I don't think there's more than a handful of people still clinging to this resentment of his appointment, is there? You see the odd thing on Twitter, but I've seen very little since he actually got the job that makes me think anyone's going to waste their time on that. It's fans are results, isn't it?
Fans are a fickle lot.
Absolutely.
He's the second manager to win on his Wales debut in the last nine, including caretakers, alongside which other one?
Is it Bobby Gould?
It is Bobby Gould. So let's hope that the parallels begin and end there.
There's an omen.
And we all know how difficult gigs found that era for Wales. So and the white kit looked all right as well.
You
have to kind of see him. It is a template and it's still a bit kind of... Wish Adidas could just do so much better. But then I guess that's where we are in the pecking order, isn't it?
Hey, Robbie.
Anything else? It's just a case now of hoping everyone kind of sees the season through.
Yeah.
Bale wins the Champions League for the 17th time or however many times it's been for him.
Yeah.
Ramsey probably wins the FA Cup again, the Arsenal Sterling Cup.
No, they're not this year. They kindly stepped aside this year.
Yeah, I think it's just to see some of our players finish the season well. Maybe Bale can get himself back in the Real Madrid team a bit. Maybe Johnny Williams and Emma Hughes can get fit. He just had an operation, hasn't he, Emma Hughes, and she's apparently gone well.
I think
himself ready for the next season.
Based on his comments about taxation this year, I think it's a lobotomy he's had. And it does beg the question, given how little he plays, what he does to earn his money that he begrudges paying tax on. But let's leave that to one side for the moment. He's probably about as far from this Wales squad as he's ever been, doesn't he?
Oh, completely.
I mean, he just doesn't even register on the radar.
No.
And we have quite a big radar for these things.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe that's what those comments were for.
Yeah.
It was basically just a nice little way of trying to get everyone to remember that he's still around.
Yeah. Do we want Joe Allen to... Do you want Stoke to go down or to stay up?
I don't really mind either way. If Stoke go down, he'll move. But I don't think he'll move anywhere that Wales fans want to see him. You know,
Swansea stay up and then go down.
Unless he goes to Swansea. So, but even then, you're not at the moment talking about a Swansea played the little triangles of 5 years ago, are you? You're probably talking about a Swansea who are going to have another season trying to finish 15th or 16th.
Well, if they stay up, exactly, they're where Stoke were three or four years ago, aren't they?
So we, of course, see all the wonderful benefits of Joe Allen, but the reality is that the big clubs don't quite see him at being at that level. Once he goes to a club where he hasn't got Ramsey and Bale playing in front of him, then, you know, there's only so effective he can be, and I think that's probably where he's going to end up again in the next couple of years.
Because the other way of looking at it, it's not the club that he ends up at, it's the manager he ends up playing under.
Yeah.
And you just don't want him playing under a Pulis or
I was going to say, that could be even worse.
Or a Pardew, which, of course, statistically speaking, is highly likely, given how often they alter.
Well, that's the merry-go-round, isn't it? The bottom half of the Premier League.
Most of us would probably recognise that it was found out some time ago, but even to those who've not wanted to let it go, between sort of Pardew and even Allardyce and one or two others, surely that has had its day now. You know, some of these clubs have not been rehabilitated by this quick change. Mark Hughes has had a disastrous first game at Southampton. I mean, I think this might be the season where some of these managers struggle to get a job again, but I don't know.
You do sense that some of them need to be put out to
to
grass a bit, don't you? It's not looking good, is it, really, for Allen? I think he could end up having a relegation on his CV, which is...
I don't care that much. I mean, is it ever stopped him playing well for us? He's near enough the best player on the pitch whenever he plays for Wales, or best player for us, certainly. It hasn't mattered whether he's been at Stoke or Liverpool or Swansea.
He's certainly always the busiest, isn't he?
You know, I want him fit, having a run of games. While he's been at Stoke, he's done quite a good job of staying fit, for the most part. You know, I think it seems to have done him good, as far as international football is concerned.
Fair point.
It's not that brilliant playing at Stoke, but there it is.
Talking to Joe Allen, he was on the receiving end of some brutal treatment by the Irish in both games.
Yeah.
In qualifying, I started writing something, and then Gareth, aka Buzz Boncath, who most people know, had also done, and he'd sort of sent that in, which was more than happy for him to do so. So we've kind of essentially merged them and gone for like a joint writing credit, like a Stock Aitken and Waterman's approach to it. Possibly Lennon and McCartney, I wouldn't want to say. And that's looking at not just posing is the Republic of Ireland, not sure the grammar. A rival now, is there a rivalry kind of sort of brewing there? But actually it begs the question, why is it not maybe more of a rivalry given the footballing history of the two countries? And it kind of explores, and it goes into some absolutely fascinating links into the history of sort of partition, both politically within Ireland, but also in terms of the two associations. Because of course in most other sports internationally, Ireland compete as a single entity. And so there's some fascinating links to a couple of other articles written from a sporting perspective, from a political perspective. There's a podcast in there with a guy that wrote a book about the history of the footballing associations on there. So if nothing else, the links are worth reading it. You'll forget the rest of the content. So that's there. And then I spoke to a guy today, actually, a gentleman called Wayne Barton. I don't know if he's any relation to our kid, but he's a Manchester United fan and an author. And he's written a biography of Jimmy Murphy, who was the Wales manager in 1958.
Yeah.
But of course, to United fans, he's kind of part of the fabric of that club because he was right-hand man to Matt Busby. When Busby was very poorly after the Munich disaster, Murphy was the manager. Murphy took them to the cup final. It was Murphy that began to kind of put the team back together, the club back together. A Rhondda boy originally, played for Wales, he obviously managed Wales. And I would imagine that most of us don't really know much more than that. And certainly I don't. Spoke to Wayne today, so we're going to get Wayne on to discuss the book.
Did you? He wasn't on the plane for the Munich disaster because he'd been on the Wales duty.
Because I think
for the World Cup qualifier against Israel, isn't it?
Yeah. And of course, had we not been pulled out of the hat
after Belgium,
eventually, then of course, you know, he probably would have been on that. And I think there's something in that kind of happenstance
in his life
that actually was quite sort of symbolic and important and poignant for him. The more I was talking to Wayne about the book, I was thinking, you know, I want to know this story. And Wayne has said that there's a lot in there about his times in and with Wales, both as a player and as a manager. So I'm kind of looking forward to getting my hands on that book, actually. Because often, I mean, Ian Rush's autobiography, one that comes to mind, it's a fascinating story in and of itself, but Wales is
he's
really kind of poorly represented, and I kind of get that in terms of the market that it's aimed at, but then I'm also, you know, got my own opinions and what I want to kind of read about. So if this has got some sort of a bit more of a proportionate, let's say, balance, then I think that is going to be a good read. And then next week we're going to catch up with Mark Ainsbury, who has been following Wales away since the year dot, aka on Twitter, Chasing the Dragon. He's just going to join via Skype and just have a little bit of a chin wag with him. So that's going to fill some time before the Mexico game. Anything else?
No, I don't think so. It's one of those barren little periods coming up, notwithstanding the things you've just mentioned.
Mm. Oh, well, and the women's game, so good luck to them.
Yeah.
And, well, until next time. Diolch yn fawr. Thank you.
Cheers. People always let you down. They never